Hello and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro. This is episode number 102, and we're going to talk today about coaching tips for 2020 and beyond. And also today, I am so glad to be back with my bro, my coach, my broach, PK, who was a little bit under the weather, but you know, he's strong, he's hard to kill, you can't keep a good man down. Welcome back, PK.
Good to be back, John. And again, we're doing this live in person in the studio, and a pleasure to get after it again, episode 102.
Yeah, live in the studio. We've got waters, we've got coffees. Almost looks a little bit like a Joe Rogan deal, you know. In fact, I just want to get started with the big shout out, you know. Love Joe Rogan, love his work, and I think guy's just an amazing interviewer, gets all those cool people on the show. And I'm not saying we're coming after you, Joe, because, well, that's a laughable thing, but you can also now get the Lifetime Athlete Podcast on YouTube.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, yeah, we are coming. We're doing it.
Or maybe we're going to invite him to be our guest and treat him with the respect that he deserves, of course. And, you know, so not only can you find this show on iTunes/Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Podcatcher, but now also YouTube. And that kind of goes along with much of what we're trying to do with this Lifetime Athlete Network or platform, is to, you know, give you guys information on how to achieve peak performance at any age, any way that you want to receive it. So you can watch it, you can hear it, you can read it. Really, the goal is just that you receive it.
Absolutely. Any way, whichever suits you best.
Yeah, and I can't even tell, that your voice doesn't sound like you've been ill, because you heal so fast, like a beast.
I tell you what, it was touch and go there for a minute, but thank you.
Why, certainly, sir. And, you know, you're the beast that you are from the Animal Fit program here at the Lifetime Athlete is a Wolverine, of course. Jackman's got nothing on you.
You're too kind, John.
Yeah, well, you know, pretty much. I mean, although lately I've been dishing it out on the pod, and I've called it tough love, but folks, it is love. It's coming from the heart. I want to help you, but sometimes we got to own things.
Indeed.
So I like talking about random things, especially if I get the chance to do that with PK, but probably some people are tapping their fingers or their foot or saying, well, you know, come on, boy, get to it. Give me some coaching tips for 2020 and beyond.
I've got my pen poised. I'm ready to take notes.
Well, I'm going to say this. There are a lot of coaching tips out there, and I'm only going to offer up a few today. I'm always learning new ones, learning how to give feedback differently or cue a person again, because what we want to have, just like we were talking earlier, is we want to have messages well-received that we can put into use.
Absolutely. Is that how you define a coaching tip?
I would think so. I mean, again, this is really randomly coming off the top of my head, but I like to try to pull down the piss off factor. That's not my goal, you know, is to make enemies in this world. But again, sometimes messages are heard better when they are more direct or even have some stronger language.
Sure. I mean, I can think of some of the best coaches that I had. I mean, it kind of depends on what your personality or mentality is, but direct to the point, critical, those can all be beneficial.
You know, I've had some coaches and some bosses. You know, sometimes you got to be careful with the word boss, because spelled backwards, that's double S-O-B.
Oh, look at you.
But I've had some coaches and some bosses who were awesome, because they could do this. They could tell me that I sucked and I could own it.
Right.
And you know, no defense. It's like, hey, you know, come here. You know what? You know, you kind of suck at that. But there's, oh, thank you. I do suck at that. Thanks for helping me. Now, how can I not suck? And that's cool. And I'd like to do that for some folks as well.
Absolutely. So when that happened in your past, mm-hmm. It wasn't, you didn't take it personally. It was true, or you at least identified with it. But it wasn't an indictment, or it wasn't a criticism or sort of a complaint, or you just didn't absorb it or take ownership of it?
Yeah, well, to be clear, you know, I've had some times when people have told me I suck and I was offended.
Sure,
and,
sure.
You know, but
we're talking about the times when a coach said you saw, you said, okay, I'm going to use that. I agree with you. Yeah. We'll move forward.
The best coaches have a way of making you feel comfortable with sucking.
Right.
And then the process of unsucking.
So do you think it is combination of a trust factor with the individual and the insight that you believe there was some truth to it? So there was like some, a thread of honesty running through it. Is it a combo of that? Why do you think you took that differently than the times when you were thinking go to hell inside your head?
I think you're exactly right. There's always got to be that trust. It's basically this. It's like, here's a person who cares about me and wants the best for me and has my back. Mm. And I want to be, I mean, you're that guy for me. Hopefully I'm that guy for you. But then that's really how we want to build all of our relationships.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about it. How are we going to get into it today? Today's your show.
Well, I'd say this. I'd say at the Lifetime Athlete, so my role as a coach there, I'm support staff.
Okay.
You know, and so whatever I am, you know, maybe I'm strength and conditioning or I'm rehab or I'm physical prep or some of these kinds of things. Maybe I'm counsel, if you will. But really the head coach or the team owner is you or the client.
Right. Right. Okay. So you're sort of adjusting what your role is based on the needs of the individual client. Do you think that are your clients liking that? Because, I mean, maybe they don't want to take on the responsibility of being the owner or their own, I don't know, driving force?
Yeah, well, what I've seen is that when a person feels empowered, that works great for how I'm doing it. So, you know, I love coaching and helping people, and I often say, you know, I'm trying to help them solve problems and, you know, health or injuries, fitness, body comp, or crush goals, sports and athletics. But when they're in charge, then they can use me as an advisor and a program designer and other things versus it being all about my ego and them being under me, which I don't think is the relationship that people flourish in, nor that I want. And so I don't need that much control and I don't even want it. I just want to help people make good decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. I mean, that is the type of relationship that we've had, you as my broach. Okay, talk to me a little more about that.
Well, that goes back to like all the things I've sucked at and people, you know, like when those coaches would say I sucked, you know, then I'd have this ownership. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, I can own that. And also there's a way, there's no judgment involved. It's just a way to improve a capacity. And that's really all about evolving into effective self-awareness. Okay. You know, so that's my goal for myself, but it's also for everyone else. I sort of want to put myself out of business. In other words, hey, you're going to work with me for as long as you're getting a benefit from it. And I want to give you things, but ultimately, you know, I would like to, you know, give you those tools that you need me less and less. And so, you know, maybe we don't replace the coach entirely, but we make that relationship more of a powerful movement towards autonomy.
Autonomy. Okay. I like that. So I wrote down autonomy, self-awareness, really. So when you're first having initial conversations, is this part of, I guess, the evolution of that first conversation to get to a shared understanding of where you fit in and also where the person fits in?
Yeah. And whether you use, you know, there's always a cool workshop and a fancy term,
sure,
like motivational interviewing or something like that, we might be employing. But really, I think the challenge when we're setting up a coaching relationship is, well, to listen and observe. And then, you know, maybe then read back to the client, you know, let me make sure I understood what you've said. You know, these are the things that matter to you. These are what your core values are. Here's how we're, you know, looking at goals and priorities. I think that's the great place to be. And then that allows a person to say, yes, let's shape and create and work together, as opposed to me saying, well, here's the system. It's always the same system. I've found that it works for 32.4% of the people that I've ever interacted with. You know, I don't do that.
Mm-mm. No, and you shouldn't.
No.
Because it sounded horrific and it sounded painful. It looked painful for you to say it. All right. So where do you get started then? Where when you're having these conversations, does the conversation start with the new client?
Well, I think once that trust has been established, I just say, let's have one major goal.
Just one.
Well, look at it this way. if most of us will have multiple goals, and but what we want to do is we want to prioritize our list so mm-hmm. that we have that number one goal, call it serving one master or aligning your efforts with the one thing that is most important to you.
Interesting. So when you're doing this, and of course this makes common sense, if we were all using this thinking in all areas of our life, it would be very effective. But I think a lot of times, especially when we're motivated, we start throwing other goals into the mix and it's hard to prioritize. So what are some of the questions that you're asking someone to help refine that? Or if someone's thinking, hey, I want to do a lot of things as I'm looking towards this next year, or this next period, moving through the winter into the summer, how do you help them refine into one major goal?
Yeah, sometimes I think being direct is quite valuable, and maybe just coming at it a few different times saying, well, okay, which one of those is most important? Or, you know, just creating that opportunity for the person to reflect and almost self-organize. You know, we use that term sometimes when you're creating a movement pattern, you self-organize, but also you're doing that with a thought pattern. And kind of what I like to do is I like to use this point that I think we all are very aware of, is the minimization of multitasking.
Okay.
So, you know, you might think about what you hear about business and productivity, or, you know, just basic psychological function. You know, we don't do as well when we try to do too many things at once. Mm-hmm. And so that very same juggling of goals and goal-specific behaviors can be a challenge on the metabolic front.
Sure.
You know, so, and most training is metabolic. You know, we're working on doing something. You know, is your main goal to run the marathon, for example? Well, then, okay, we know that pretty much specifically what the endurance requirements are, mm-hmm. you know, how the aerobic training needs to go. So that really has to take front and center stage.
Sure.
Versus, my goal is to develop absolute strength. It's like, yeah, we want to have some strength training in the marathoner's training program, but that's not priority one in that case. And so that's kind of how we do this. So, okay, we understand what the main goal is, and then we start to understand, well, what are the behaviors that are most likely to affect the desired outcome?
Mm-hmm. I got that. And I do think that, you know, the training programs can be complex, multifaceted, but that does not mean that they're going to be multiple goals or multitask.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe a different example would be if the person says, well, I want to get lean, I want to get strong, I want to get fast, I want to get a lot of endurance all at once. Now, obviously we want all those capacities in the functional human beast, but, you know, if you have a specific goal like weight loss, for example, or body comp tuning, that's really not the time to try to train for your peak performance in an event. The real goal of the peak performance is, okay, let's get body fat percentage down to 16% or whatever the goal for that individual is, and we establish that first. So now we have we've gotten that, you know, so now we've got this lean, healthy person for whom training is now going to be more effective. So now maybe we go into a different realm of focus. So it doesn't mean you're always stuck with the same goal, but serving one at a time is the point that
one
I was trying
to make. I like it. Okay. So we've got our major goal. Where are you going to take me from here?
Well, this is, I don't know if anyone else has said this, but this has occurred to me over maybe a lifetime, I guess. Training is more like cooking than it is baking.
All right. Pretend you're talking to a caveman bachelor that doesn't know anything about either of those. What do you mean by that?
Of course, I know you to be an extreme foodie who's more knowledgeable than I. However, since you set the stage, I say this. Baking requires a very specific recipe. Mm. You know, you have to put the ingredients, the amounts in the order, bake at the temperature for the time, or you get these funny science experiment looking things. That's baking. It's very precise. But cooking, there's a little bit more free form. It's a flow. It's artistic. And there's less of a specific recipe. So when we're cooking, you know, we have this general plan, but then, oh, maybe I'll throw in a dash of this or a splash of that. It's very responsive and instinctive. And mm-hmm. and that's really how training should be also. The people who fail, and I don't mean this with anything but a kind heart, but the people who fail miserably are the ones who try to bake their way to fitness and health because they're trying to follow this rigid set thing and becoming a slave to it versus adjusting that and shifting it slightly based on how their body is responding.
Interesting. So that makes complete sense. And it's also counter to a lot of the regimens or programs or protocols or philosophies out there, especially for, you know, evangelists for their own methodology, say this is how it has to be, this is what you have to do to be effective. This problem, it sounds a lot like your, you know, 80-20 rule that we talk about quite a bit on this pod, where, you know, if you're effective 80% of the time, you get almost all the benefit, etc.
Yes. I'm steepling my hands here because I want to try to respond to that intelligently. You have to have some kind of a system that you're following and some amount of discipline and dedication. So I'm not saying that everything's freeform and willy-nilly, but there's that wonderful middle ground where, okay, we use the system as a construct or a paradigm, not as doctrine, you know, not doing everything verbatim. So that's kind of how I would say that. And I'd say that what we also have to recognize is that progress with training, you know, health, fitness, sports, any type of training that we're doing, just like the human experience, is typically going to be nonlinear.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That sounds right.
Yeah, and so sometimes, like, I like to do things when I get the chance to present using graphics, because I think not many people want me to use 1,000 words, and a picture can really do that very rapidly. So one of the ways I'll graph out that relationship is I will show, first of all, a graph with all these data points on it. So, you know, we might have these kind of like a scatter plot, you know, all over the place, and each one represents a key performance indicator or a marker on any given day or number of days. So we see that over time. And when you look at it, it looks like someone, you know, took a shotgun and just blasted, you know, it's all over the place. But, you know, if you said, okay, well, if I'm going to connect those dots day to day and look at it really closely, it looks like an EKG pattern or a roller coaster. It's really erratic. But if instead you use your statistics and you back up from it and you draw the line of best fit, so you just draw a line that goes through, you know, the best fit of those data points, you typically will see a fairly linear progress with intelligent training. Obviously, you know, if training is idiotic, I can see that. But we're not about that here. No, Lifetime Athlete.
Let's assume it's not idiotic. That's a little bit of the emotional and intellectual counsel that a coach can provide, where here is sort of, excuse me, this is what's going on. This is accumulation over time, and taking a step back and being objective and looking at it, allowing for those variances, the, you know, days where you feel great, days where you don't have the energy, etc. Sounds like, again, this is a relationship of trust that you're building, whether or not you're coaching yourself or you, John, Jay-Z is coaching someone else.
Yeah, and I think that's so true. You know, depending on the goal and the circumstances and one's personality, you can coach yourself. You can be very successful at it. And that's what I like to help people doing that. But also, I like to help people working with other coaches or to coach them myself. You know, however, I think we want to use this term coaching as a very, you know, broad umbrella, if you will. And maybe the last thing I'll say that's related to this is no one workout is magic. Mm-hmm. You know, because sometimes I think we get that idea. It's like, oh man, training, you know, these are the exact kind of workouts I got to do. And if I just crush this one, it's going to do, you know, a lot for me. It's probably going to do something.
Sure.
But it's really the accumulation of training over time and how we manipulate workloads so we can have adaptation that produces these high levels of ability or outcome.
Sure. There's no magic recipe.
And that's probably like that's the long game, you know. It's the view, the horizon view that we probably all should be taking. But, you know, I think it's okay to be short-sighted, but as long as our expectations are reasonable when we're doing that.
Okay, so let's shift gears. Let's talk about how coaching and coaching tips in 2020 apply to peak performance.
I love that. And I don't want you to be offended with me for slightly switching gears in doing that. But then maybe want to explain what I'm about to talk about it will be totally fitting with what you asked me to start into.
Sure.
I just got this thing in the mail the other day, and I won't use too much information unless a person probably could still find out what we're talking about here if they really wanted to. But I received a flyer for the 2-day 2020 geriatric conference. This is for healthcare providers to receive continuing education units, and you can get management strategies and more for, I'm going to read this off, Alzheimer's disease and dementia, pain management, geriatric pharmacology, geriatric emergencies, managing challenging behaviors, caregiver stress and burnout, and much more.
And much more. It sounds definitely upbeat. That's a murderer's row of just horrible stuff.
I'm calling bullshit on this.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And here's why. In this world, we always should respect and honor our elders and take care of them. I mean, I think that's a part of the human condition. I know you and I believe that.
Of course.
It's very important to us to do that in our families and our communities. Having said that, really the message here that I got from this advertisement for this course was that as we all get old, everything gets bad,
right.
and there's a long time of suffering, and it's a swirling mass of disadvantaged life and healthcare quote unquote utilization and monies and money laundering almost, and then tragic ends, which apparently also is burning out, the providers as well as the recipients of said care. So I'm here to say no.
Right. Well, even the graphic, we can't just, there's an elderly person looking forlorn, staring out the window, almost an image of hopelessness. And you're suggesting this is baloney, and the opposite is actually true.
Yeah, I'm actually saying it's bullshit, just to be clear. But this is not about being a lifetime athlete. It's not about kicking ass and not about being hard to kill.
Sure.
And that bugs me.
Right.
Because I think we have, instead of acquiescing to say, oh, don't change your lifestyle, don't do anything, don't train for peak performance and just enjoy the hell out of a great long life. No, just, flounder and suffer this way because that's the way it has to be. I say no. And in fact, one of the ways that any listener can get around that further.
Sure.
Is come to the Hard to Kill workshop.
Hard to Kill workshop. Tell me, what is that?
Well, it's my baby, of course. But the Hard to Kill workshop, February 29th, Bozeman, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a Saturday, 9 to noon.
Okay.
We are going to be putting on, really it's a masterclass in kicking ass. It's basically looking at all the science that we're always talking about here that relates to what you can do to achieve lifelong health. How do you achieve peak performance? How can you become and or stay a lifetime athlete, an athlete for life, put it that way, and ultimately be harder to kill because you're going to have that graph, that health span graph that we talked about that stays high and goes long and it ends very quickly. So you tend to die late in life, die healthy, die fast, as opposed to dying too soon in life in an unhealthy state from a protracted, and messy ending. And there's too many statistics supporting that that's what's happening for a lot of people. And we don't want that. So if you come to the Hard to Kill workshop, you're going to learn a number of things, but basically how to get healthy and long living. Yes, but how to get strong, fast, mobile, durable, and not be weak, stiff, fragile and slow, because those are the ones that get eaten, and we're all in this together. We're fighting back the Reaper. So come and join me.
Fighting back the Reaper. Absolutely. So did you create this workshop in response to the thinking of sort of the inevitability of that slow, gradual, painful whimper into the Reaper's arms that is reflected by this flyer?
Yeah, kind of several things. First of all, a lot of the stuff that's in here is basically, high level athletic science. And so, I've got, like collegiate athletes and they use this stuff to get their best performances. But then I started to think, well, why, collegiate athletes, professional athletes, Olympians, that science isn't just for them. Everyone can learn how to use it. So if you're, you're a high school athlete or you're middle aged and you're a fitness enthusiast or you're older and maybe you're hoping to be the granny at the family reunion playing with the kids, rocking it, going down in history, not sitting on the sideline. All those things are athletic and they're exemplification of the human life best lived. And so that's, you know, that's my mission, sure. But also a lot of people have been kind of asking, and these light bulbs have been going on for me. It's like, well, how do you put this together? How do I have health? How do I have performance? You know, what's the science of training? And also, you know, can I have that at the very same time I'm not compromising, you know, health or longevity? Yeah, you can. Hard to kill workshop.
Right. And so it's hard to kill workshop, but you're really just describing peak performance in life, in your body as you go about your life.
Oh yeah. And it's interactive. It's very lab based. We've got some exploration into, you know, functional movement patterns, breathing techniques, squatting, deadlifting, postural correction, gait mechanics. There's some pretty cool stuff. So, you know, if a person said, gosh, I need somebody to help me make sense of the science, you know, give me the nuggets, like, well, how are you supposed to strike your foot when you run? Okay, we're going to answer that. You know, well, what about all this kinds of breathing? You know, there's all these courses and camps about breathing. Can you just give me a few simple explanations of what they are and how I can do it to get more out of my life and training? Yes, absolutely. Come to Hard to Kill.
Camps about breathing. I did not know that was a thing.
Oh, sure. You know, you've got like the parasympathetic group, the oxygen advantage work, Patrick McCune's work. You've got Wim Hof with his, you know, the Iceman and that type of breathing. You've got ideas, you know, how to breathe during different types of exercise. Also, how to breathe and or hold for max tension and compression in the system for strength and stability. Whoa. Yeah.
Deep well.
Yeah, the topic is deep, but that's what Hard to Kill does, is it gives you the ability to go to that well and scoop a delicious, mug of the right stuff and drink it.
Right. Just nab that pearl right from the surface.
Oh, yeah. You just, you know, sip it, gulp it, whatever you need to do, but you're going to get it.
We're mixing it. Sipping pearls. All right. Okay.
Yeah, so your job, you know, like among many things, because you're so awesome, dude, is keeping me on track. And so you'd asked me about peak performance. And you said, okay, well, like, you know, when peak performance is the goal, you know, it's the objective of what we're doing, what do we really mean? I believe that's what I heard you say. I'm going to say this. We're really actually going for the capacity or the ability to produce an outcome.
Okay.
You don't always have to be testing and proving yourself. Now, I believe that's important to do on occasion. Yes.
Okay, I'm trying.
But what we really do in training is we just try to create the ultimate beast that has these abilities and can do whatever you want to do. And again, it goes back to whether you want to play with the grandkids or whether you want to win state championship. I mean, those things are peak performances, but you can't have that outcome unless you have the ability.
I see, really. So it's building up this reserve of capacity to do the thing. And that's sort of involved in the goal setting where, you know, I want to be able to climb this mountain, for example. I don't have to do that. It doesn't have to be my goal. I don't have to actually climb the mountain every time. But the training is built around building the capacity to do that.
Yeah, so that you could climb the mountain just about any time you wanted.
Right.
And
right.
And really, that's where training isn't the goal. It's not the end. It's just a process. Mm-hmm. And it's one to be enjoyed. So that's why we train smart. You know, we find out, well, how can we make training work and fit for the person and not cause injuries and get results and have fun? That's important. But again, that's just the process that we get to this ability that we're talking about. And it also allows for that self-identification that, hey, we salute you, lifetime athletes, for listening, because you're the guys that really defined yourself, identified yourself as wanting to be athletic for life. And it's that's the definition. I think I'm inspired to help others achieve. I want to do myself. And I think it's the right one for all of us.
John, I like that. I like that. Keep it going.
So the prizes in life. You know,
yes.
You know, health, sport, they're given to those who achieve.
No doubt.
But again, I would say it this way, it's who we are or who we can be that is more important than what we do. Hmm. You know, so sure. Like you might, you might win an event on a given day, and that's pretty awesome. But over time, if you prove yourself to be a champion,
sure,
you know, that's really, I think, what we're helping, trying to help people do is just be champions in their own world, what they want to accomplish. And that's really all about not being a slave to a workout schedule. You know, I think working out is, it's a wonderful thing that we do, but again, really, I mean, they don't give prizes out for, you know, doing the workouts. They give prizes out for, you know, doing and being great. And I think that that's really a message I try to deliver. And I want maybe the listeners today to just feel that coming from a heartfelt perspective.
Excuse me. All that you were talking about there reminds me of identity. How you see yourself, you know, it's a mentality shift as opposed to checking boxes versus sort of what do you embody or what's important to you as you embark on whatever your pursuit of your goal is. Let's say we're going to be tactical, practical. Let's say we've got some type A's out there and I have a bit of that myself. And I'm saying, Jay-Z, give me something I can put into play. I like what you said. I've got a goal. Understand, I'm even borrowing some of your stuff from earlier. I'm using some pull, you know, language internally, some pull thinking. Let's get tactical a bit. What are some tips that someone could actually use to put this philosophy into practice?
Man, I freaking love that because tactical and practical, tack prack.
Here we go.
Words. Yeah. So really, that I think that gets to tracking, you know, and so every one of us, when we have goals and we're trying to design effective programming, we benefit so much from sure. keeping data. So this is the message with tracking. Keep a training log, you know, or a journal, a diary, whatever one wants to call it. And you can do that on paper. You can do it via various apps or software or spreadsheet. You know, there's any number of ways that you can do it. And you can determine what's important for you to measure, you know, this is what I planned to do. Here's what happened. Here's my outcome. Here's how I felt about it. Here's what my, you know, so-and-so said. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about here. And the message with any training log or journal is it's about joy, not judgment. So we want to keep it, keep everything kind of flexible in that, that flexible in mindset, at least where we say, okay, well, I'm going to use this thing as a celebration to kind of accumulate what the plus column's looking like. Sure. And I'm not going to take myself through too much of a beat down if I've got, you know, let's say a minus column, which I'm not necessarily recommending that you do.
Sure. You know, what's interesting about this, I had a friend that kicked off a workout program recently and we were talking about that. And I said, just write down how you feel. You know, and I'm no great expert like you, but I said, write down how you feel after, and then just kind of, you know, write down what you did. Actually, in this case, just write it down. What was interesting, you know, she did the workout, she wrote down after, like, oh, you know, I've got some swelling in my wrist, etc. And then the next day, it's like, actually, this is how I felt in the morning. And the thing that I think is interesting about this suggestion is that not only do we, if we're not tracking this stuff in some way, we can't even remember what workout we did 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, a week ago, let alone how we felt after it. So there's no way to really sort of go back and make some educated decisions about what worked, what didn't. Certainly, you know, if you're tracking how much you can lift or if you're tracking a body count goal, that gives you an ultimate piece of data at the end of the line. But how about tracking the process? So I like this a lot.
Yeah. And again, maybe to be specific, like basic workout data, you know, so like that might be for, let's say it's a cyclist, you know, and so he or she might record, well, what was the duration of the workout? What was my average power, peak power, maximum heart rate attained, average heart rate? You know, there's some data. What was, you know, the mileage or the kilometers? You do that. Then you go, oh, well, let's look at recovery data. So maybe that person is using like an Oura ring or a Whoop strap. And so they're a little bit higher tech, you know, or maybe they've just got some other apps they're using to get heart rate variability data. Or again, you know, they'll put some of that in there to say, okay, well, here's how my body responded to that workout. I can use that as kind of a recovery measure. And also we might say, what about identifying a KPI or key performance indicator or two? And so that would be, you know, every once in a while you're going to visit something like, you know, you might apply an effort on the bike, for example. Let's say it's a 30-second sprint and you're looking at like, well, what was the total wattage that I attained? And, you know, if that goes up over time, great way to do it. And obviously a weightlifter, that's fairly self-explanatory. You know, if we've got a one rep max and it goes up. Okay. So that's kind of what I would say. And I guess I didn't plan on doing this, but I guess this is a chance to make a plug for my proprietary system that's coming out in my new book this spring.
Yeah.
I'm writing a book about, imagine this, folks, you know, training for peak performance through the lifespan. and kind of what I did was I had to take all the things that we have out there in terms of zones of effort and intensity, and then these different things that we monitor to design and also, you know, assess and adjust programming. And so basically that's what the system is. And so it revolves around, first of all, an understanding of, you know, efforts of zone and workload. And we've talked about that before, that, you know, workload is a combination of intensity and duration. You know, in a session or over time, you can use volume for a week or something. But anyway, getting to the point, it's all about the wire and the whys. And so those are my terms. So the wire stands for workload impact response estimation. So when you're designing programming, we're looking at what kind of workload are we putting in and how much spacing and recovery do we use? Because, you know, as I like to say, when you're executing a workout plan, you got to wire it before you can fire it.
Really?
Yeah. I do like to say a lot of things like that. And that's why there's only a certain audience that works with me, because, you know, this, it never stops.
Never. There's new terms.
It ain't got
every moment.
Yeah. And then the whys is, you know, you want to get wise about your training, you know, from a wise guy, of course, but that's workload impact systemic evaluation. Mm-hmm. So, we create basically a spreadsheet where we can actually correlate objective and semi-subjective findings. So, okay, let's say you did this workout that we wired it to be at this rating, but now when we look at it from a wise perspective, we're like, okay, well, your heart rate was this, your resting heart rate was this, your heart rate variability is this. This was what your sleep tracker showed us. Also, now, how did you feel? How did you score that? Da da da. So suddenly we know, okay, we were a little bit spicy on that, pushed a little harder than we should have. We're gonna ease off a little bit. So there's that flexible programming. Or you're like, man, you ate that and spit it out. Way to go. So that means, okay, we can do another one of those sooner, or maybe do it a little harder.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you're not benchmarking your experiences in some way,
you don't know.
You just don't know. So it's in that way, you don't want to go from cooking to completely mixed metaphors into jazz, you know, where it's completely free, where it's just, you've got an instrument and you're just going nuts. And so in that way, I think that there's the training log, whatever method you choose to use, is important, because it's going to kind of draw you back in. And I do think the process of just saying, hey, this is where I want to get to, and these things are important to measure and to take stock of at some sort of frequency, even the process of imagining what those are, very effective.
Yeah, I like the way you said that. And that's kind of like, I would say, I'm always talking about science and common sense. Sure. I think we have to start with science. And, you know, somebody famous whose name I'm not recalling said, you know, without data, you're just another person with an opinion.
Sure.
You know, so you can't guess. You have to know. And so you have to go through a time period of like, okay, well, when I do this, this is where my heart rate's at. And then, of course, the next day, this is how I feel. And also, this is what the thing says. But over time, you know, the human's a brilliant beast. You can learn. Your instincts, your wisdom are just going to start to say, okay, now I know pretty much that, like, if I did this, this was the effort I was at. I can guess that to within very close parameters, and also what my recovery response is going to be. So I always like that, evolving, educating, respecting the human beast, because I like wearables and gadgets and devices, because they help us to learn objectively. But once you learn, you don't have to keep relearning it. You know, you just know. And I think that's really where I sometimes have to talk to people a little bit because they really get caught up in looking at, you know, their wrist or whatever, you know, there, and say, well, maybe stop asking that thing, you know, what it thinks you're doing, and you tell it what you're doing.
Or furthermore,
yeah,
think about how you're doing and then reconcile it later with the information that your device is sending you.
Start
with how you're feeling. I think that there's many different ways to approach it, but if you're not collecting that information, if you're not logging in some way, some fashion, you're just going to be, you know, if I said, John, look back at your month of training, you hadn't written everything down, it's going to be the vaguest, most broadest strokes that you can. You're probably going to forget some of those, you know, more, you know, just some of the pieces.
That's why a lot of the dietary research is so flawed, because it's epidemiological studies that uses FFQs or food frequency questionnaires. And they'll ask people, you know, what'd you eat in the last 6 months? You know, and so it's like, I mean, really, this is published data? It is. And it's sad. So folks, always be open-minded, skeptical, without bias and those kinds of things. And in summing up, keeping your training log, hey, celebrate moderate consistency, the small wins, and your outcomes will happen.
No doubt. Always. So take me home. Summarize this. Put a bow on it.
Take me home tonight. You know, though, I was thinking about you.
Sure.
I mean, like, I had a big grin. You know, I was like, I'm hanging out with PK today. And, you know, you're bad company, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, physically, I guess.
No. I mean, you're good company, but you're a badass. And you know, you're like, bad company, I can't deny. Like Paul Rogers saying it with Bad Company. Hey, you know, back in the 70s, I had that t-shirt.
Did you?
The black one with the silver Bad Co on it. Man, it was awesome.
Really?
Yeah, but it was like rubber, you know, and I was, you know, probably just starting to grow a few chest hairs, and it all just was like stick, you know, and then you pull it off.
Really? Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. Huh. It's a bad company, man. You know, it's just a famous logo. I think if we could, we can't, you know, it's obviously it's copyrighted, sure, trademark, but if we could use it for you and Hard to Kill, I mean, it's Bad Co.
It'd be my walk of music if I was a slugger.
Well, it'd be like if you got down right now in a 3-point stance and went hard, I'd be looking at a silhouette of a man on the wall because you'd crash through it.
Really? I that might not be true.
Well, what would be true is if I did it, the cracking and shattering sounds and the hilarity of me crumpling on the floor would be there. But anyway, I don't know what's up with me today. I think it's that coffee you served me. Thank you. It's delicious. So last point. Mm-hmm. Take yourself and your training seriously, but not too seriously.
Okay, got it. I saw what you did there.
Yeah, you know, that's been like a story of my life, man. It's like, you know, I probably bounce between being too serious and not serious enough. And doggone it, I don't always know when the right time is, but don't we learn?
So, I mean, I think we could parse that and say, you know what that is when you see it. It's being, you know, moderately consistent, being dedicated, having a goal that means something to you, but not being a complete automaton and, you know, milking the joy out of whatever the pursuit is by this regimented, over-serious application. I'm sure that you're saying that is based off of you seeing people that have either not taken it seriously enough or taken it too seriously and hadn't had success due to injury or burnout.
It's the sweet spot.
Right.
You got to have that sweet spot, the Goldilocks, you know, with so many things.
Sure.
And so I would say this, a couple summary statements. Always view yourself as an athletic human. You are, it's in your genes. And, you know, if you were a high school star and that started to fade, you can get that back. I've also worked with some like ex professional athletes, and, you know, depending on the sport they play, a lot of times it's tough for an ex-professional athlete to find athleticism again, because sometimes they're beat up, you know, whatever, but no, it can be done. It's in your genes. So we want people to be athletic through the lifespan as high as possible at any point, but yeah, let's maintain it. So that's one message. Next would be train with a purpose in mind.
Always.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, what's your overall purpose for that? You're working towards that one goal. And then, you know, what's the goal of the session at hand? How's that relate? And then also, how can you adjust it based on this live real-time feedback that this amazing thing called the human beast is giving you?
Absolutely.
And then dive into the process, immerse yourself, and use it to better yourself as a person with more more capacity and a more capable self-identity.
I like that. Very, very useful.
Yeah. And in my finale, recognize that in the end, our accomplishments may not be as important as our contributions.
That's deep stuff.
Let's make the world a better place, people. And you can do it by being more athletic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. A lifetime athlete is athletic of mind and spirit, as well as body. They are inseparable.
Powerful. Agile.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, thanks, guys, for being with us. As always, so appreciative. If you feel like sharing this with one other person who you think it can make a difference in their lives, we'd be honored. If you'd like to give us a rating and review anywhere you listen to the show, and it's everywhere, please do. Thank you. And, of course, don't forget, come to the Hard to Kill workshop.
Adios.
Peace.